Our first case for this morning is Malero v. Thompson, case number 10-3875. Mr. Brooks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is Justin Brooks, and I represent the petitioner Marilyn Malero. Ms. Malero's 6th and 14th Amendment rights were violated when her trial counsel, Jeremiah Lynch, failed to investigate her case or prepare himself in any way to represent her prior to advising her to plead guilty, a non-negotiated blind plea of guilty in a death penalty case. Mr. Lynch had no prior experience litigating a death case, and his conduct fell below an objective standard of reasonableness under Strickland versus Washington.
I suppose everybody has to start someplace, but if I understand it, the government did not want to negotiate.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And the reason the government didn't want to negotiate was because...
you just get a choice of pleading guilty or not pleading guilty. You don't get a choice of just hashing it out and working something out with the prosecutor.
Well, because Mr. Lynch failed to do any investigation in this case...
the prosecution wouldn't negotiate.
Sure, so Ms. Malero would have gone to trial.
Yes.
Your Honor, had he prepared himself for this case and done the necessary investigation, my client would have gone to trial. So we had an inexperienced attorney who prepared himself no way as an attorney by going to any training seminars, by hiring a mitigation specialist, hiring an investigator, consulting with any other attorneys. He not only did not prepare himself as a lawyer, he didn't prepare himself for this particular case. And I think if Your Honor reviews the sentencing transcript in this case, you'll see how shockingly unprepared Mr. Lynch was in this case. He wasn't aware of common death penalty things such as reverse witherspooning. He didn't know how many peremptory challenges were allowed in a death case. He wasn't prepared to handle this case or any case. And Mr. Lynch only met with my client twice prior to the decision to plead guilty, and it was for a sum total of 70 minutes. And during those 70 minutes, it wasn't just to discuss the plea, it was to discuss every aspect of this case in preparing my client. The charges, the potential defenses, the evidence against her, and he explains his strategy by saying it would be a novel moment in American jurisprudence, and the surprise factor alone would assist my client in front of the jury that she was pleading guilty as opposed to having a trial.
Well, this was after motions had been litigated, though. So there was substantial litigation prior to that decision?
Well, there wasn't substantial litigation, Your Honor.
Well,
there was a motion to suppress her confession.
Right. The confession, which is the key piece of evidence here.
Absolutely.
Extremely detailed, tape recorded, or not tape recorded, but transcribed by a court reporter.
And absolutely.
In the presence of a state's attorney, in addition to the police officers, and found to have no elements of coercion, plus eyewitness testimony, plus the confessions of the other co-defendants.
Yes, Your Honor. There were three key pieces of evidence in this case that were to be considered by Mr. Lynch and my client in making the decision. There was Jackie Serrano's testimony, the alleged eyewitness. There was Yvette Rodriguez's testimony, and there was the confession. In terms of Jackie Serrano, Mr. Lynch never interviewed her. He claimed he left a business card at her address. Had he gone to her address, he would have discovered, as this photo here illustrates, that Ms. Serrano lived 489 feet from the crime scene across the park from where it occurred. This crime occurred at midnight, and whereas the government talks about how this was a different season, this photo was taken, and it was years later, two things hadn't changed. It was still 489 feet from the house to the bathroom, and still at any time of the year in Chicago at midnight, it's dark. There was no way, as homicide investigators later looking at the scene did their declarations, that she could possibly see what she said she saw.
I had a preliminary question. I just want to check on something here. The murder was in, I have a timeline here, May 12, 1992. Lynch was retained in June of 1993.
That's correct.
Who represented him, her, all that time before that?
He was represented by the Public Defender Office.
And that's when a whole lot of this stuff occurred. Not just the confession, but the aftermath and a lot of other things. And that's my look at this. So at the first thing Lynch did, he obviously didn't file the motion to suppress because that was in February 1993. The first thing he did, he argued it.
Yes.
So from that time forward is what you're talking about. Did anything happen before then that kind of iced this thing
for her. Mr. Lynch also barely consulted with prior attorney work in the case. He said he had one short conversation when he was first given the case.
Well, was there a lot that went on before that he should have known?
In terms of investigation, I'm not aware, Your Honor.
Okay.
I know what Mr. Lynch didn't know when he advised.
It's just an awful long time. That's all.
Sure.
I'm looking at without Lynch, frankly.
I think the key thing is if you look at Mr. Lynch's testimony at the motion to withdraw the guilty plea, you learn exactly what Mr. Lynch knew at the time he advised my client. And what's critical in this case is what did he know when he was sitting in the Cook County Jail in 1993 telling this 21-year-old Puerto Rican woman whose primary language was Spanish to plead guilty, to enter a blind plea of guilty in a death case? And what he didn't know to start with was that it was impossible for Ms. Serrano to see what she said she saw.
Well, he testified that she instructed him to plead her guilty.
Absolutely. And, Your Honor, even if a client wants to plead guilty, that doesn't mean he has no responsibility as an attorney to give effective assistance of counsel.
Obviously, but the statement that you made just prior to my question suggests that it was the opposite. That was the import of my
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yeah, my point was
that he told her to plead guilty. It was she who asked him to do it, and then they had the discussion. At least that's my recollection of.
There's strong contradiction to that in the record. In fact, two correctional officers testified at the resentencing hearing that after Ms. Malero met with Mr. Lynch, she was crying, and those officers said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "My attorney said I have to plead guilty, or I'm leaving here in a box either way." So that's what Mr. Lynch did testify, that she wanted to plead guilty at his hearing, but there's contradictory testimony from other parties that that's not in fact true,
but
Mr. Lynch pressured her to plead guilty.
That's a factual matter for the state courts, right?
Agreed, Your Honor. But there is within the record conflict as to that. I don't think there was a specific finding that Ms. Malera wanted to plead guilty.
Right.
But she did in fact go into court and take that plea.
Your argument up to this point, and much of your argument in the brief, fails to grapple with the standard of review that we have on a state habeas matter.
Well, the standard of review is whether or not federal law was applied correctly by the state court, and thus far all the findings
applied reasonably.
Was applied reasonably. And there wasn't a reasonable application of Strickland in this case. Mr. Lynch capitulated his role as counsel by not investigating Ms. Serrano, who, by the way, there was a discussion that she had no motive to lie. When my investigator talked to her, and is in the record, she was the girlfriend of one of the victims. And her testimony came after the police came to talk to her and told them their theory of the case. When we went and talked to her, she also switched her story as to what happened. And we're not making the argument that that exonerates Ms. Malero, which is what the state has said in their pleadings. We're saying Ms. Serrano did not see anything at all. And in terms of Yvette Rodriguez, she was a drug trafficker. By her admission in resentencing, she had been trafficking large quantities of drugs around the country. She was arrested that day, and she was charged with a drug charge, and she was facing 40 years of prison. Ultimately, after she testified against my client, she was given a suspended sentence and drug treatment program. And she changed her story. Initially, she said Jackie Montanez did both shootings, which is what happened, and then changed her story later on.
Was there evidence that there was some sort of quid pro quo?
Well, the important thing, Your Honor, is that Mr. Lynch was not aware of these facts, was not aware that she changed her statement, was not aware of her background and her charges. And so as he's advising my client, he doesn't know that the two key witnesses in this case, had she gone to trial, which she would have done if she'd known this, that the one key witness couldn't have seen what she said she saw, and the other key witness had all this impeachable evidence that would have torn apart her testimony. And you can review her testimony because I did the resentencing in this case and put her on the stand, and she's the most incredible witness that I've dealt with in a case like this.
Well, that's a matter for the state courts to iron out. That's not a matter for us to iron out. You've identified some holes in their testimony and some grounds to impeach their credibility, but unless the state courts unreasonably applied Strickland and in resolving those disputes about counsel's performance, we don't interfere.
They did, in fact, unreasonably apply Strickland, Your Honor. There is no case like this where you have a non-negotiated blind plea of guilty in a death case where an attorney has done no investigation Had he advised my client of this evidence, she would have gone to trial. That's not a good application of Strickland, and it's not a good application of cases that have come out of this court that have found ineffective assistance of counsel.
Can I go back just to my timeline again? It bothers me. She pleaded guilty on September 27, 1993. On August of 1993, Montanez is convicted. September 22, 1993, Mendoza pleads guilty and testifies, at least in her plea, that Malerno shot Cruz. So it's after that that is this blind guilty plea. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Malerno knew about those two incidents. And that's what I'm looking at. I assume you represented her when at the state Supreme Court when the death penalty was vacated.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You won that one. And now we're not dealing with the death penalty anymore. It seems that all of this discussion here is what should have happened. And now when we look at the end of it, I'm even wondering if there's any prejudice.
I see my time has expired, Your Honor. May I answer your question?
It's going to take a little longer than I guess.
Your Honor, first of all, this has to be considered as a death case. At the time Mr. Lynch gave this advice, my client was facing the death penalty and, in fact, was sentenced to death. So the standard of review in looking at it is, did she get effective assistance of counsel in a death case when he failed to investigate all these components of the case? Now, Ms. Montanez was, in fact, convicted. Ms. Montanez has repeatedly confessed to both these homicides. She took the stand in her trial, and the jury rejected her testimony for good reason. Ms. Montanez is guilty of this crime, and it doesn't really have a bearing on Ms. Malero, because all the evidence here does point to the fact that Jackie Montanez committed both these double homicides. Even, in fact, the government talks about the video with her flashing gang signs. That still also indicates that Ms. Montanez was involved in this crime. And none of those things, except for the confession, Your Honor, which is difficult to get around. However, had they gone to trial, the jury would have been entitled to hear that Ms. Malera was awake for 2 days. She'd then been kept up all night. She had homicide detectives tag team interrogating her. She was told she was going to get the death penalty if she didn't confess to one of these murders. And ultimately, there was a lot of facts that could have been developed to undermine that confession, as well as psychological testimony to show that Ms. Malera was susceptible to that kind of influence in the same way she was susceptible to the influence of Mr. Lynch in advising her to plead guilty. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Kashyap.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Gopi Kashyap from the Illinois Attorney General's Office, here on behalf of Respondent Appellee Cheryl Thompson. I'd like to start by following up on what counsel just said. Although, even if Montanez shot both victims, petitioner was accountable under Illinois law. Illinois law requires not only that the accomplice share the criminal intent of the perpetrator, but if there's evidence of a common criminal design, that is enough to find a person accountable.
She supplied the gun.
I'm sorry?
She supplied the gun.
She
supplied the car.
She said in her court-reported confession that she supplied the gun, although the answer to that, that response came in answer to what did you take with you? And petitioner responded with a silver automatic pistol. There's some evidence in the record to suggest that perhaps Montanez may have supplied the gun because Montanez, in her court-reported confession, said, I took the gun. But in any event, she drove the vehicle. She had discussed before with her co-defendants that they were going to do a mission to avenge the death of Mudo. They were going to just go kill some Latin kings. She drove the car. She took her co-defendants over to rival gang territory with no other apparent purpose than to go into the territory and look for some rival gang members. When they didn't find Latin kings immediately, when they got there, they drove around and they continued to drive. She didn't stop and turn back around and go back to her neighborhood and say, okay, we didn't find any, let's stop this. She continued until they found two Latin kings in a car. Once Montanez had identified them as Latin kings, and knowing that Montanez had a loaded gun in her pocket, they agreed to meet with them in Humboldt Park. They went to the park. Petitioner was there. She went into the park. She didn't stay in the car. She went into the park, and she heard the gunshot in the restroom. And then afterwards, she fled the scene with her co-defendants. And not only that, she then went on to the corner of Cortez and Washington and celebrated with them and bragged to Rodriguez about killing them. She then continued to maintain her close affiliation the following day when she went to Mudo's funeral and afterwards left with Montanez and then met up with Mendoza. So all of these circumstances show that she's accountable for the murders regardless of whether she shot, she actually shot Cruz. But in any event, the overwhelming evidence of guilt, including her multiple admissions under oath, especially at her sentencing hearing, show that she is accountable for the murders. So I'd like to go on to talk about Jackie Serrano. First, counsel inherited, as this court noted, counsel inherited the case from a public defender who had represented petitioner, and he received the entire file. And that file contained an investigator's report, and the investigator had interviewed Jackie Serrano. So he already had a report of an interview with Jackie Serrano. There was really no need for him to continue to find Jackie Serrano and interview her yet again. But on top of that, Jackie Serrano maintained twice at two trials, Montanez's trials, that she could view the crime scene and she could see the crime at night because there were lights on in the park. And she did that over extensive cross-examination by Montanez's trial counsel. And moreover, Marilyn Serrano, her aunt, also told police that she saw the crime scene, thus corroborating Jackie's testimony that she could hear and see the crime scene. And petitioner's new evidence, at least the diagram that he just showed, is simply unreliable because of the difference in the foliage and seasonal and the seasons, and he doesn't account for those differences.
The aunt testified?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The aunt testified?
The aunt did not testify. We only have her police statement, which was simply that I could see the crime, I could see and hear the crime scene, but she provided no other specifics on what happened. She did see Cruz fall to the ground, and she did see two women with him. One was holding him, and the other one was behind him, but we have nothing more than that.
Do you know if Lynch attended or anything about Lynch with regard to the Montanez trial?
Did Lynch attend? Is that what you asked, Your Honor?
Is there anybody that this is going on just a few days before she pleaded guilty?
The trial took place in August 1993, early August 1993, and Lynch testified credibly that he spoke with Montanez's counsel during the trial in substance. And then after that is when he went to visit petitioner, and petitioner said, "I want to plead guilty." And at that point in time, counsel said, "Whoa, wait a minute," because he was surprised. He said, that's not something they had discussed before. So he said, "Okay," and he was surprised, and he said, "Let's think about this." And he needed to think about it. So he thought about it, and he let her think about it. And then the following meeting, which occurred sometime before Montanez's sentencing, which occurred on September 9th, he went into her and he explained all of the evidence, the pros, cons, consequences of pleading guilty. And in fact, petitioner at the motion to withdraw guilty plea hearing admitted that counsel discussed the pros, cons of pleading guilty. So she's not disputing that. She also admitted that she told counsel she was really sorry and that she expressed her remorse to counsel. And so after doing so, and after explaining everything, all of the evidence, petitioner directed counsel to plead her guilty, and counsel's advice was simply that's one way to go.
In that conversation, did they discuss Mendoza's plea of guilty? And I guess she wasn't sentenced at that point, so we didn't know she got...
At that conversation, she was not, as far as we know, she had not been sentenced. Mendoza was sentenced and pled guilty September
1st. She's the one that got sort of the... didn't get the double murder. She pleaded to something less, and I assume her sentence was something less. These girls, the petitioner was 21. These other girls were 15 and 16.
Yeah, the other girls were minors. And
I assume there wasn't any death penalty.
It was unavailable.
Yeah,
Your Honor,
for them.
Okay. Yeah. So Mendoza did plead guilty, and she did receive a deal from the state where she got 35 years. For the murder of Cruz, the first-degree murder of Cruz, and then 7 years for conspiracy to murder Reyes to run concurrently. But that occurred on September 22nd, and the record shows that there was a status hearing at which petitioner's counsel was present that day. So, and he testified that he had spoken with Mendoza's attorney. So it appears that counsel would have known that this plea was occurring. But on top of that, petitioner testified at her sentencing hearing that she knew before she pled guilty that Montanez had been convicted and that Mendoza had pled guilty. So she was aware of that at the time she entered her plea.
We've got a procedural default problem here. Seems to me we've really only got three particularized claims that were preserved through the state courts as they're required to be. You want to address that?
Sure, Your Honor. Petitioner, in her post-conviction appellate briefs, broadly alleged that petitioner failed to investigate defenses and interview witnesses. But then she limited that argument by specifying that petitioner failed to discover evidence from, one, Serrano, that Montanez had shot Cruz, two, that Yvette Rodriguez had made inconsistent statements and had a motive to lie, and three, that suggestibility evidence from Dr. Kovar would have supported her coerced confession defense. That's it. That's all that she raised in the post-conviction appellate court. And indeed, as stated in her reply brief on page 8, that's how she summarized her arguments. So the post-conviction appellate court addressed only those three factual bases for ineffective assistance. All the remaining claims the petitioner now raises in her habeas petition are defaulted. And as discussed, she cannot show her actual innocence because she's accountable for the crimes regardless of whether she shot Cruz.
And we have no cause, to say nothing of the prejudice argument. Right.
Your Honor, she has not asserted any cause, so there is none. I'd like to go back to the timeline that Your Honor discussed. The crime occurred in May of 1992. Counsel actually appeared in February of 1993. He actually filed the motion to suppress in February of 1993. His name is on the motion itself in the
Who,
record.
Lynch?
Yes.
He appeared earlier than that.
He appeared earlier than June of 1993.
So is he the one that initiated the motion to suppress?
I believe the record appears to suggest that the public defender had filed a motion to quash and a motion to suppress, but then he refiled a motion to suppress based on his conversations with petitioner, and he testified to that at the motion to withdraw.
So that's okay. So there's actually two filings then?
Sorry? There's two, yeah.
Okay.
In sum, Your Honor, I would just like to say that, as this court acknowledged, the state courts found petitioner's counsel credible, and they found petitioner not credible. They rejected the suggestibility evidence that petitioner had presented, and finding that also incredible. They found that petitioner lied at her suppression hearing, lied at her motion to withdraw a guilty plea hearing. May I conclude? So in light of those credibility determinations, Your Honors, this court should affirm the district court's denial of habeas relief. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Brooks, your time had expired, but I'll give you a couple minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honors, the question isn't whether Mr. Lynch gave any counseling to my client. Mr. Lynch, who's now a Catholic priest and no longer practicing law, did sit in that jail cell and talk to my client for those 70 minutes. The question is whether he prepared himself as a lawyer to have that meeting, and whether he prepared himself to give her advice in a death penalty case as to how to plea.
Would you like to address the procedural default question?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The court has found that there is some factual basis, and there's been an argument about some of the factual basis for these claims being defaulted as to not being dealt with in the appellate courts. The critical thing is that the key facts that the prosecution based their case on have not been defaulted. So when you get to the prejudice prong of Strickland, there are certainly some more things that Mr. Lynch could have done. There's a panoply of things he could have done. But the critical ones have been preserved, and that was investigate Ms. Serrano's testimony, investigate Ms. Rodriguez's testimony, and investigate the confession, because that's the three bases for the conviction. So I think with those other factors, whether Your Honors consider them or not, I think they're very telling as to how incompetent Mr. Lynch was. But when we get to the second prong of Strickland, those are the critical facts, and those have been undermined.
Sounds like a smuggling argument to me. You're trying to smuggle in the procedurally defaulted claims on a prejudice review.
No, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that those have been preserved. That the main issues have certainly been preserved.
Preserved, but you've argued a whole lot more than that in this 2254 proceeding in an attempt to, as I said, smuggle in through the prejudice prong of Strickland all kinds of procedurally defaulted claims.
I think it's just important that this court get a full picture of what occurred back in 1993. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, the case is taken under advisement. Our thanks to both counsel. The court will be in recess briefly while we have a panel change.